Thank you for joining us today. Our prayer is that your life will be touched by the Spirit of Almighty God with constant and powerful truths that can be applied to your everyday life.
We are going to continue tonight talking about our new vision for this year. And so I want you to go right to Matthew chapter 28, verse 18. Pastor gave us some good definitions on Sunday of what it means to be a disciple. I want to remind you, I don't know if I have it exactly the way he said it, but I know that he used this word, an adherent to the doctrines of another. Another definition would be one who embraces and assists in spreading the teaching of another. And so when Jesus says that we are to make disciples, he's telling us that listen, if you're going to do this, you got to embrace this teaching, all right? And you've got to spread this teaching, and you've got to take this teaching and not just make it about bringing in the new converts, but growing the ones we already have. And so in Matthew chapter 28, verse 18, it says, Jesus came and told his disciples, I've been given all authority in heaven and on earth. Therefore, go and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Teach these new disciples to obey all the commands I have given you, and be sure of this, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Let me just stop right there and say this. If this vision, I think we can all agree it's awesome, but it's also a little bit daunting because I think it's going to push us. It's going to stretch us in areas that might be very uncomfortable. But let's read that last part again one more time. He says, and be sure of this, I am with you. I'm not going to send you to go do something all alone and leave you to yourselves. I'm with you. I am with you. So if you feel the weight of this mandate that Jesus gave, that's good. That's a good thing. Because it's an incredibly important thing that he said here. And if you feel that weight, good. But know this, he's going to be with us. If I'm going to be honest, in the flesh, I'm a little scared at what this might require of me. Because I like making my disciples right here on this property. That's really easy. Would you all just continue to bring him to me? And I'll just continue to decide. I'll do that all day long. But what about the mall? You know, I mean, what about the license bureau? That's where I'm kind of nervous, because I kind of think that generally speaking, when that's the part that I fear a little bit, probably that's where I'm going to get really, really stretched and pushed a little bit. So, all right, but I want to talk about something tonight. You see the screen up there, it says disciple, and then it has an R at the end. And here's the deal. We are to be disciplers. That's what it means when it says, go make disciples. In other words, you're a disciple. Jesus was speaking to the disciples. He's saying, you're disciples. Now go make some disciples. So we are two things. We are disciples, and then we are disciplers. And I want to talk tonight about how do we get to the place where we can be the discipler? Well, the fact of the matter is we got to start by being the disciple. And Jesus had 12. He had a lot, but he had 12 that he was real close to that followed him around and that he commissioned to go. He had 12. But you know, that commission in Matthew 28 is not the first time they did any of those things that he was asking them to do. It wasn't all brand new when he said, hey, go make some disciples. It wasn't all brand new. They had been practicing that for 3 years. All right? So when Pastor stands up here and he says, now, here's your commission as the head of this body of believers, when you know, he's our spiritual leader. The Bible says we're to obey our spiritual leaders. If he stands up here and says, this is what you need to do, my guess is he's not going to just pick something out of thin air that we've never done, that we're not equipped for, that we have no knowledge of whatsoever. He's going to take everything that he's taught us, that we've learned to that point, and he's going to say, now go and use all of that. Use that. And that's what Jesus was doing in this instance. He's taken people that have been following him now for 3 years. They've learned a lot. They've grown a lot. They have learned to trust in his ways. They have occasionally been reminded that their own ways aren't the best because they do default to their own ways at times. And then that's when you start sinking into the water and Jesus has to reach down and grab you and pull you back up, okay? But they have learned a lot. Have they learned it all? No. Have they encountered everything they could possibly have encountered to that point? No, because eventually they all die. But they have enough. And that's one of the things that I think is really important for us this year to know, is that wherever you are in your walk with Christ, you have enough to go out and make disciples. You have enough. I don't know what enough of what, but I know that you have enough. Because if God tells us to do it, he has equipped us to do it as well. And so I want to talk tonight about how do we accomplish the first part of that? How to be a disciple. Now, some of us have been disciples for years. Some of us since childhood. You know, there are some of us who have probably been saved as early as the as 4 or 5 years old. Has anybody been saved at that early of an age? Michelle, Caden, several of you out there been saved from that point in your life. Some of you, we're talking decades and decades. And some of you it might have been very recent. I don't know. But here's what I know. Those that have been saved for decades, they got enough. Those who've been saved for a very short period of time, they have enough of whatever is needed to go out and do what Jesus called all of us disciples to do. But I want to talk about just being a disciple, because I think we got to get real comfortable in this idea of being one before we can get really comfortable with the idea of going out and making more of them. And so I want to give you 4 things that I think are important when it comes to being a disciple. And the first one that I want to talk about is this. We got to keep first things first, and we got to do this. We've got to believe that the way of God is best. Now, you say, think, well, that's just ridiculous. Of course I believe. No, a lot of you don't. That's not directed at any one in particular person. That could be said to me at times. Because if I believed that the way of God was best, then the way I live would be a reflection of that. And you know what? The way that I live is a reflection that God's ways are best in this area of life and over here in this area of life and maybe in this. But I've got this one that I haven't quite figured that out yet. I've got this area of my life that I keep resorting to the old ways. I've got in that area of life, I keep taking my eyes off of Jesus and I start sinking all the time. We've all got those areas of life. And so we have to begin to believe that the way of God is best. And if I don't believe that, I can't duplicate that in somebody else. I can't teach someone else to believe that if I don't believe that? And so when I say that we're going to be a disciple and we're going to believe, I'm not talking about believing on Christ, because we've already done that, but we're going to believe not just that he was the Son of God, that he came to earth as a man, and that he died and he rose 3 days later, and that he sits right now at the right hand. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about just a real, practical, genuine belief that God's ways are best. And too many of us are still very, very, very immature in certain areas of our lives. And I'm not saying everybody else notices it. What I'm saying is it causes you not to have the confidence you need to be able to go out and make disciples. So we got to believe that God's ways are best. I can't duplicate in someone else what I don't first have inside of me. I can't model something for other people that isn't in there. I can't manufacture sincerity, because people pick up on it. And I don't know, when I think about this task of going out and making disciples, there's a part of me that's going, okay, I'm going to have to really act like I'm really a good Christian and I'm gung-ho and I've got this thing all together. People see through that. Maybe not in the beginning, but eventually people see through that. We can't manufacture a sincerity here. I've tried it. You've tried it. We've all done that at times. I was thinking about this earlier when I was kind of on that thought. I kept thinking of that song, The Great Pretender. Have you ever felt like the great pretender? By the way, that's way before my time. I just know a lot of music. Just throwing that out there. But I think about that song, The Great Pretender, because I have felt many times like the great pretender. Because I did have it together enough right here that it looked like I had things going on in my spiritual walk. But I knew all the areas where I didn't have it. And you feel like a fraud. So if we're going to genuinely convey to people that God's ways are best, and take young Christians who've just been saved and really get them to believe that, then I've got to believe it. And so I've got to commit to believing that God's ways are best. Here's the bottom line. Jesus was a discipler. He had 12 people who adhered to his teachings and believed on him. He lived out in front of them the very things that he wanted them to learn. If we're going to do that, we've got to believe that his ways are best. 1 John 2, verse 6 says that he who says he abides in him ought himself also to walk just as he walked. All right, now, don't let that be a daunting thing, but let that be an encouragement. You're capable, you are able to walk as Jesus walked. Luke chapter 6, verse 40 says, students are not greater than their teacher, but the student who is fully trained will become like the teacher. And so, here, you have the ability to be like the teacher. You can take that on a small scale, and we can say, I can say I have the ability to have the boldness and the confidence that the pastor has. I have that in me. But I can go even farther and say I have the ability to have the boldness, to have the wisdom of God as I go out and do what he's called me to do. So 12 disciples in a 3-year ministry, Jesus laid down his life at the end of that ministry. He defeated death. He took back the authority that mankind had given over to Satan. He rose up on the third day. He walked on the earth for another 40 days. And then he had one last task. Don't you think? Can you just try to put yourself in that situation there? Being one of the disciples. You have been with him for 3 years. You have watched him miraculously heal people. You've watched him miraculously feed people. You've watched him walk through walls. You have watched him disappear through crowds, escape when there was danger. You have watched him stand up to the most, most religious, really quite hateful people, and stand up and tell them that what they have believed in for centuries is wrong. You've been with him. You've watched all of this. Then he lays down his life. You watch him be led to slaughter. You watch him get scourged. You watch him cry out on a cross. And when he dies, you think all is lost. And 3 days later, you see the greatest miracle of them all. And when he comes back to life, he doesn't come back empty-handed. It says he comes back with the keys of death and hell. It says that he comes back with the authority that we had given away. He came back with it. And you get all excited, and then he sticks around, and he's there for 40 days just in case you didn't believe it, just seeing him one time after you had watched him be nailed to a cross after you knew he died. He could have just come back and made one appearance, but he was there for 40 days, and you got to see it over and over and over again. And now he's gathered you together, and he's going to say one more thing. Don't you think it's going to be a big deal? For us to gloss over and to move through and past Matthew 28, the way I really believe the American church has done for a long time, it grieves the heart of God. I believe that. And it's a big deal. It was a big deal to them. And it changed the course of their lives forever. They did just what he said, and they never looked back. And it should change the course of our lives forever. When we get a revelation, and I pray and I believe that we're going to get a revelation of this verse. And I was talking to the CMA kids this morning. Pastor talked here about 6 or 8 weeks ago. I don't remember when it was, but he was talking about Michael Jr. And he had watched that video, and he talked about how he rewound and watched it again. And then he backed it up and watched it again. I don't think you rewound, you just backed up. We're a little more digital now, but he put the pencil in the cassette and then he twisted it. No. But he backed it up and he watched it again. He backed it up and he watched it again. He backed it up and he watched it again. And I'm telling you right now, you might not have gotten a revelation of Matthew 28 yet. But we're gonna back it up and say it again. Back it up and say it again. Back it up and say it again until we get, as a church, a revelation of what it means to go out and make disciples. To teach them to obey what God said. It's such a big deal. So we've got to be a believer, because this was huge for them, and it should be huge for us. We're going to be a believer. Revelation 12 says that we overcome the enemy by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of our testimony. Can I tell you something? If we look at ourselves as Christians, just for a moment, we just kind of see ourselves as salespeople. Because really that's what we're trying to do, aren't we? I mean, we're trying to sell Jesus. I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. But I got something, and I want you to have it. Now, I'm not expecting necessarily something in return. So I guess in that way, it's not selling that. But I want to sell the world on Christ. But I can put together a really great sales pitch. But if I don't have hard data to back that up, I really don't have much. All right? So what is our sales pitch? What is the sales pitch of a person who got saved last week to go out and share with someone else? I mean, they're still on the milk of the word. How can they go out and make a disciple? Well, first of all, you do have to learn and grow in the things of the Lord. And I would encourage us, you know, if you are someone, even if you've been a Christian for a long time, but you've not really, really spent a lot of time in the word, you should do that. That's how you be a true believer. That's how you believe that God's ways are the right ways, that the God's ways are better than your own ways. But I can know the Bible backward and forward, and I can make a really great sales pitch. I can have been a Christian for many decades. But can I just tell you something? If you don't know what you have, if you think, well, I don't really know the Bible that well, and I don't really feel like I have what I need. The greatest sales pitch, the greatest testimony is that of a life changed. And hopefully, if you are saved, you can say, I don't even know how to explain it, but here's what I can tell you. I'm different. Something lifted. I don't even know what it was. But something changed. Something in me shifted. And when you can say that, what are you doing to that person you're speaking that to? Now, can I just tell you something? Everybody's not going to receive it. I was thinking about that earlier today because I was talking, in my mind, I was kind of going to this place of talking about speaking things in love and all this kind of stuff. You know, we can speak in love all day long. That does not mean people are always going to receive it. So we got to do what we're supposed to do, and we got to trust the results to God himself. But the fact of the matter is that I really believe that most people, when they hear you go, I can't explain it. I don't even know what really happened. All I know is something in me just knew that what I was hearing was true. And the moment that I just went, that's true, I believe something changed. You know what? I want to know. I'm a Christian. I've had that experience, but I still want to know what happened to them. A life changed is such a great example to others. You got to know that your testimony is one of the greatest things that you have in showing people that you really believe that God's ways are the best. So that's the first one, believing that God's ways are the best. All right, the second thing I want to talk about. We've got to believe, and then number two is this: we've got to count the cost. There's a whole lot, a whole big section. Let me find the verse where it's at. Whole big section in Luke 14. Go there if you would, real quick. Luke chapter 14. There's a big long section there about counting the cost. I like the one where it says, the part of this passage, I'm okay with the part of the passage where it says, what king wouldn't go to war without first deciding if he could win the war with the number of men he has versus the number of men the other ones have? Or and who wouldn't build a building without just sitting down and deciding how much that building is going to cost? I mean, what are the cost? What's the cost of this? What's the cost of that? I like all of that. It's that part in chapter or in verse 26, Luke 14, 26, that says, and this, by the way, these words are in red, okay? It says, if you want to be my disciple, you must by comparison hate everyone else. Your father and mother, your wife and children, brothers and sisters, even your own life. Otherwise, you can't be my disciple. And if you do not carry your own cross and follow me, you can't be my disciple. You know what? I'm all about sitting down with a piece of paper and a pen and figuring out how much building costs. I'm all about, you know, I'm not in government, but I'd help them if they wanted to figure out if they had enough people to win the war or not win the war. But when you start asking me to hate my mother and my father and my children, I don't know that I care much for that idea. And obviously, that's what God is saying here is, as the I think New Living says, in comparison to how much we love God, it should look like we hate. But I'm telling you, there's a cost. And some of you have paid it. Some of you have family that doesn't treat you the same. Some of you, there has been a cost. Some of you, there hasn't been much of a cost. What if there is? Are you willing to pay that? I mean, we've got first world problems here in the United States. What if someone starts banging on your door and dragging you out of your house and confiscating your Bibles and throwing you? What if there's a cost and the world is changing? And don't think that you might not one day be asked to pay that cost. So you better sit down and ask yourself if you really believe that God's ways are best, because there is a cost. But you know what? It's better to die in obedience than to live in disobedience. And there are people who have modeled that before us. And you know, God was with them to the end. And that's what I'm counting on. And that's why I can stand before you today and say, I will. Because just on my own, Melanie, she couldn't do that. But Melanie and God can. So you've got to count the cost. The third thing is this. You got to settle for second. Settle for second. What do I mean by that? Well, the red letters in Matthew 20:28 say this. You know that the rulers in this world lord it over their people, and officials flaunt their authority over those under them. But among you, it will be different. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first among you must become your slave. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life for a ransom for many. You got to learn and be happy and embrace second. Because when you're, I'm telling you, it's kind of like saying that it's better to die in obedience than to live in disobedience. It's the same thing. It's a much happier existence to live in second place than it is to always be striving to stay in first. And we put ourselves first a lot. We live in a culture that's all about me. And, you know, there's so many sayings out there if you just Google. But, I mean, you know, just this whole idea of you only live once. What's the idea behind that? The idea is do whatever you want, whatever makes you feel good, because you only live once. That is correct. I only live once. It's going to be for a really super long time. And eventually, everything that I could ever imagine or dream is going to be mine, and I am, but even better than that, I am going to be in the presence of God, and that is the prize. That's the prize. So we've got to learn to settle for being second, Why? Because Jesus did. And being second hurts sometimes. Having to put other people in front of you. We have to learn hard lessons. I was telling Shelby this the other day. Do not think the lessons stop. You stop learning lessons. I feel like the lessons just keep. I don't know, some days I'm just being pummeled with lessons that God's still teaching me. And you think that there's going to be a certain point at which, well, okay, I'm not saying I've arrived, but I don't need to learn all those lessons anymore. No, you're always going to be learning lessons. And they're always going to be difficult. And some of them are going to hurt. But that's how it is when you make a conscious decision that you're going to serve other people. Because the idea is you put them first. And so we have to settle for being second. And then the last one is this. To truly be a disciple, we've got to believe, we've got to count the cost, settle for second, and then we get to redeem the rewards. All right, now what does that mean? Oh, I get all kinds of good stuff. Well, you do. You get love, joy, peace, patience. I mean, what is peace worth? I mean, really, what is peace worth? Is there a price? It's worth so much. But beyond that, beyond just getting the stuff, that kind of reward. When we learn to do all of these things, the reward is we make disciples. Because we have, at that point, have something that others are interested in, don't we? People want to buy what we're selling at that point. And when we become a disciple that truly believes, that settles for being second, that has counted the cost and said, no matter what, that's all I know of that song, but anyway, it came to my head and I had to get it out. oh, it's still going through there, sorry. Okay. But when we do all of that, we accomplish what it is Jesus commissioned us to do in Matthew 28. People are interested. People are willing to listen. You know, if I'm just putting on a big show, nobody cares. They'll care for a little while. I might draw a crowd, but I'm not going to maintain a following. And so when I do those other things, people want to follow. Now, is my desire that I will, you know, I'll break off and start my own church because I'm going to get a following of my own and we'll, I don't know, what we'll call ourselves the Melanieites or something like that. But no, Paul said, follow me as I follow Christ. And when we've got all this stuff together the way it should be, that's what happens for us. I look at an Adam and I say, I'm going to follow that guy because he's following Christ. And the results in his life are showing up. And I believe if I do what he's done, they're going to start showing up for me. Does that make sense? This year, I really believe we are going to get a revelation of what this means. And I'm telling you, it's going. We can take everything I just said and apply it to what it's going to be like because there's a cost. There really is. And it's going to require us to be second. It's going to require, and sometimes it's not second to somebody else, but second to my own desires. I'm going to lay down mine. And I'm going to pick up that which God would have me to do, believing that he's going to embolden me, empower me, and make me more than able to do it. And trust him with the results.
We hope that you have been blessed, encouraged, and motivated by today's message. If you are interested in more messages by Christian Ministries Church, then log on to our website at www.cmchurch.net. And click on the podcast link.